Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 48. For those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, TV, and today, the London live circuit. David Mulholland is the founder and big cheese, as he puts it, for the Soho Comedy Club, which has run for over 10 years in the centre of the capital. I got him on the show to talk about what he thinks is the reason for the longevity of the club, the reason why it has surpassed some other clubs, the reason why it's been able to stay a paid club, loads of good stuff like that, loads of on how to promote clubs in London, how to grow your club, how to really find a sort of niche for your club and continue to pull in good numbers of audiences in what is an increasingly competitive market. If you're someone who's looking at running a club in London, I think you'll get loads out of it. If you already run a club, I think you'll get some really great advice out of it. And I think also it'll give you a really unique perspective on what it's from the other side as a promoter and how much work goes into promoting a club. Going to just jump straight into the podcast, to be honest with you. We're going to jump straight into it. I just thought his take on the way the economy has changed, and how that's affected people's habits of going out and how much disposable income they have and why that means that it's had an impact on both comedians' careers as well as promoters' careers, as well as the scene in London, as well as flyering and time out going down. We just covered so much in this hour. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you get as much out of it as I did. Without any more delays, this is David Mulholland. So I was going to ask you a question to start off with, but I feel like I sort of want to know what you were going to say a second ago about being known as a promoter and that not necessarily being what you want to be known for.
I mean, when I started the club back when I was a new comic, basically so I could swap, have one night and turn it into multiple nights by swapping nights with other new comics who started up a night.
Right.
Just to get stage time.
Yeah.
And, I've run things before. And I ran a magazine. I was an editor. Running a tiny little organization wasn't difficult for me. But yeah, I mean, that's how I started it, and I've never had a show I haven't performed in some capacity. Or if I'm not there, that's because I'm performing somewhere else.
Right.
So as many shows as Soho Comedy Club has done, I've done that many plus quite a few others.
So was it always a paid show, or was it a free show at one point?
Always a paid show.
Okay, and you started that how long ago?
2006.
2006.
10 years ago.
10 years.
Yeah.
Because now, obviously, free nights are everywhere in the capital. Was it easier back then to run a paid night versus a free night?
It was easier to run a paid night. And, yeah, there's a lot more free nights going on. And, boy, are they not helpful.
Right.
Because an audience that doesn't pay attention. They have to be invested in it. And I haven't, for the Monday night, which is the original night, for the Monday night, I'm still charging the same amount of money as I was 10 years ago. And obviously with inflation, that's worth quite a bit less.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago. You know, a pint is now more than £5. Or it's about £5. Five and maybe up. And back then, I think you'd be getting three drinks for £10. easily. And now, you know, it's so... I wonder what the inflation mark is over the last 10 years, but it's got to be about 20% cumulative.
So you're not a fan of the free nights then? Or?
No, because I think people have to be invested in it, even in a small way. You know, even if it's £2, just so they feel like, hey, they should pay attention. So, no, I'm not a fan of the free. And it, I mean, I understand why people do it. I think Barry Ferns does a good job with it, with, you know, because he does do the contributions and people do put money in. And but in general, no. And especially if you're trying to, if you're doing it for a living, well, the money's got to come from somewhere. You know, it's you can't spend full time doing comedy if you're not making money at it somehow. I mean, in the case of Top Secret, they run free nights, but they keep the bar. So basically, they're running a bar basically with comedy on the side, and you know, that's one model. But no, my nights have always been paid because there's costs. Yeah. It's not a hobby for me. It's what I do for a living.
Yeah. And your night, you mentioned before, doesn't always make 100% profit on every night you run?
No. No, my Monday nights are pretty much break even. Friday, I make all the money on a Saturday.
Okay.
And yeah, it's the really kind of hope that at the end of the year, more has come in than gone out.
So it runs four nights a week, right?
Four shows a week, three nights.
Okay.
So Monday, Friday, and then two shows on Saturday.
Right.
And in three different venues.
Okay. And Monday night breaks even, Saturdays make money. Is that because Monday there's less people coming out, or because...
The costs on the Monday night are tiny.
Okay.
I mean, it's me, a little bit of marketing, and a couple flyers.
Right.
You know, so the costs are tiny, but the room's small. But it's, you know, it fills up and it feels great. It's a really fun gig. It's probably the most fun gig that I run during the week, but it's tiny and it informs the other nights. But it's a new material night for pros.
Right.
So it's a great workout room. And you don't need a big audience. You just need enough of an audience in a small enough space and enough variety in the audience so you can really test whether the material works. The downside, it's such a fun night that sometimes the audience is laughing and people go like, that was great material. And they try it somewhere else and not such a good audience. And they're like, I can't get it to work again. So yeah. That happens.
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times. And it's frustrating because you're sort of like, why did they? Oh, because they've been so primed that you're like. So you mentioned flyers and flyering, and in Leicester, is it Leicester Square? Where that's the predominant area that your flyers kind of work.
Yeah, and I know for the Monday.
Yeah, and I know Soho do that as well, and so do the Comedy Store sometimes flyer.
No, Comedy Store doesn't.
Okay.
No, the clubs that flyer, the legitimate clubs that flyer. Is my club, Soho Comedy Club, Top Secret, 99 Club, and then there's others that kind of come and go. Like Monkey Business was there, but I think they've disappeared, and they were flying for a little bit. And then there's a club that flyers loads, but they're not a real comedy club. They're just a tourist scam,
right?
Which is really frustrating.
Right.
Anyone listening to this podcast, never go to London Comedy Club.
Right.
It is a tourist scam.
Okay. Can I ask what's happening there? I don't.
It's run by a little psychopathic guy named Inky Jones. And what he does is he hires loads of flyers. He has quite a bit of marketing to push high-priced tickets. Totally false advertising. I mean, completely, utterly, 100% false. He makes it seem like Michael McIntyre is coming there every week. And what the show is it's Inky Jones being insulting the audience for 90 minutes. And it's, if you want to see sort of old-style racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic comedy, and where he just lays into the audience, and he's a psychopath. He enjoys attacking people. And then he'll bring on a new comic to do like 10 minutes, and that's the show. And there's a guaranteed no money back. And he doesn't pay his flyers. He stiffs them. He tells them they're being paid commission, then he stiffs them. So their turnover is huge. He gets about half the audience walks out every show in disgust and demand their money back, and they won't get their money back. I mean, he's a psychopath, and that's not a real comedy club.
How is that allowed to happen?
Advertising Standards Authority has twice ruled that they must cease and desist their false advertising.
Right.
But they don't have the legal teeth to actually throw someone in jail.
Right.
Okay. And he's just refusing to stop. He just, you know, he'll stop for a little bit, change a website. Like, the problem is, he's been mentioned on Your Money, Their Scam on okay. BBC One.
Yeah, I know.
He was featured on that.
Right.
It's the only thing I've ever seen on that show featured where it was a one-off. You know, normally it's a national thing.
Yeah.
And it was a one-off, one guy at one place.
Wow.
And it was mentioned on that show. It's a total, utter scam, which is sad because it for every person who goes there, they go, oh, stand-up comedy's horrible. And in the West End of London, there's amazing stand-up comedy. There's, you know, loads of really good clubs.
Yeah. Okay. Let's not.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to.
My little rant on Inky.
No, I just wanted to clarify what we're talking about and who, because this podcast is online, so
every,
as a result.
Everybody, every promoter, and every pro comic who works Central London hates that organization.
Right.
Like, with a passion. I mean, talk to Mark Rothman and you'll watch him turn red in the face just talking about it. But I mean, comedians as well, who know it and hate it.
Mm.
So it's not, you won't upset anyone except Inky. What's really funny is his one of his websites has an Inky fan club, and it has a counter with six digits,
right.
And there isn't a single member.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. You'd think he'd hide that until, I don't know, maybe
you'd
10.
Think, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Maybe, I'd love to think he ironically has put that up. Like, just sort of, oh, no, I've got no fans. Like,
I don't think that's the case.
Okay. Well, I was asking about flyering because flyering in Edinburgh, for example, pretty much the only way if you sort of need to drum up more audience to get people in.
Yeah.
Flyering in London, does that help out with clubs? I mean, how do you find your rate of sort of number of flyers to people? I mean, do you track that?
Yeah. Every show.
Okay.
Yeah. We track it every show. We've got records going back for quite a ways on that. Flyering is becoming less effective.
Right.
And it's really because of smartphones.
Right.
And smartphone applications. It's becoming, people are able to look things up really easily now. Information is easier to get. But it's still effective. It still works. But not so much, it's not so much the flyer. It's the person. It's basically having a prop so that people can sell a show.
Right.
And that's really the, that's what flyers are good for. They work well in Leicester Square. They don't work well in other areas of the city. And in Edinburgh, they're vital.
Mm. What else do you do then? Like, do you have an online sort of,
yeah.
I mean, you've got a website and you've got social media and stuff, but what's your, have you found anything specifically that works quite well for getting, like, bums on seats?
No.
Okay.
I've found a lot of things that are a little bit good.
Okay.
But you put it all together and that's good.
Right.
Our website is quite highly ranked.
Okay.
So it's, that's probably the biggest selling tool. It's okay. Probably, yeah, the Google ranking. And we've had the website for a long time. It's a lot of links to it.
Yeah.
So it's that helps, and the site's updated all the time, and it's going to get better because we're improving the website.
Mm. So obviously a web presence is vital nowadays and stuff. Have you ever had an experience with like Groupons or like group discount buying?
Yes, I tried Groupon. There's no point in using Groupon.
Okay.
The thing is that here's the thing that really killed Groupon for us. We were only making £2 per person on Groupon. And when people were leaving, they were saying, wow, that was a great comedy show. I wonder what we'll find on Groupon next.
Right.
Like, so we were getting fans of Groupon, not fans of the comedy show. And at £2 per person, we weren't making enough money to justify it. It was basically papering the audience. And once people realize that you're on Groupon, they'll wait for your tickets to come out on Groupon, and it'll kill your regular price tickets. So no, it's pointless. I've experimented and I hate them.
Okay. Social media wise.
Yeah.
Are you sort of keeping in contact with your audience very much? I assume you have a core base of people that keep coming back, or are you sort of the same, like sort of attracting tourists, and because it's in quite a touristy area.
Yeah. Yeah. But we have we don't get that many tourists.
Okay.
We're, strangely enough, you'd think that it would be like half tourists. It's not.
Right.
It's like maybe 5 or 10% tourists.
Right.
And although we'll have quite a few people from overseas in the audience, they're typically people who live in London.
Right.
So it's a very London audience.
Okay. And in terms of, I remember you wrote an article in 2010, so this was like 4 years into promoting, but 5 years, no, 6 years ago, sorry, about, it was for Chortle, and it was about the death of comedy clubs and how the council was stopping flyering and promoting and or trying to put a stop to that.
Yeah, they were trying to.
Have you found that that's, if you're saying that flyering is tailing off a bit anyway, have you found that that has actually caused a bit of a death to the club or had an impact on your club at all?
Well, the flyering ban never went through.
Okay.
And it was Westminster Council. Westminster Council was trying to stop Inky Jones.
Right.
And they were, so they started cracking, but they couldn't just single them out.
Right.
So they cracked down on everyone. And the way that they were doing it was basically through strong arms and threats.
Right.
And strangely enough, as it turned out, it wound up cracking down on everyone except Inky Jones. And there was quite a bit of protest about it. And then the ban, it disappeared. Westminster Council decided that that was not the strategy to use.
Mm.
But there is a threat of that being nationally against flyering. So it's not... the problem is if you're a small arts, not just comedy, any, small grassroots arts, you need flyering. You need to get the information out. There needs to be a way to get the information out, and flyering is a pretty effective way of doing that.
Okay. And in terms of... So, the club's 10 years old.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are starting their own nights now. And like you said, the free element makes most sense simply because a lot of other... If you start a night now that's paid, I feel like there's a different perspective sometimes to a free night of what you're going to get, quality and also in terms of room and stuff. So what do you think is like the longevity for you being able to keep your night, first of all, going, but also at a paid level?
Well, the thing is... if it was, hopefully forever. If you want to get good entertainment on a weekend but you're not willing to pay for it, well, you're not going to get it. Mm. You'll be priced out. Mm. That's kind of we work extremely hard on making sure that the quality of the nights is very high. Most people are pros. So people who make their living from comedy, why would they do a free night on a night when people go out and spend money? Like, you won't, you know, there's loads of acts you will not get at a free night, and they're the better acts. So that just, do I think in a city of 10 million people that there's enough people who want to see quality and be assured of quality? Yeah. I mean, if you're going on a free night, it's going to be people who either, the best you could hope for is someone who is very talented and very hardworking, but is not able to get the paid nights, or someone who for some reason doesn't have another gig that night that pays and goes like, well, I might as well do a free thing just for the stage time. Hmm. But that's the best you can hope for on a free night. So, I mean, I think they have their place. I'm not... there are some promoters who just despise them. I think, well, okay, I understand why people do it. But I don't think my club is threatened by it.
Okay.
It's threatened by other paid clubs is what it is.
Right. Because there is a lot of competition in this area of London. I mean, I assume you don't actively see them as competition, because, I mean, you know the people who run the other clubs. So,
yeah.
So they're not competition as such, but they are in the sense that there's only a
certain... It's sort of friendly competition.
Right.
I mean, I know the promoters of all my major competitors.
Right.
And I get along with them. You know, we're all in the same business. We have more in common than we have separate.
Right.
You know? So, and they're pretty good guys. Mm. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with them. And I'm a comic, so I look for spots too.
Yeah.
You know? I have performed for the two main competitors.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's foolish for you to see it as a negative when, as a comic, you would love to be able to double up if you could, if they're around the corner sort of thing.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense.
And I don't run every night of the week, so
yeah,
I need other places to perform.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, how long have you been a comedian now?
As a stand-up, 10 years.
Okay.
I started the club pretty much just sort of 6 months after I started doing stand-up.
Right.
But I did sketch and impro before that. And I was a musician and I was a frequent public speaker. So I started stand-up 10 years ago, but I didn't start comedy 10 years ago. And I started performing when I was a kid.
Okay.
It was very funny when I quit journalism to be a stand-up. One of my oldest friends said, yep, that makes sense. You've always been a performer.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
And we've known each other since we were kids.
And how long did it take you to go full-time?
The club helped with that. And because I was still doing some journalism up until 2008 or 2009. So it was about 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah, before I was making my living entirely from comedy.
So it took you 3 or 4 years to get to a stage where you were making your living entirely from comedy?
Yeah. Not a good living.
No. No.
sort of scraping by.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But,
I wasn't sort of... DVD sales and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So you said the club helped with that. So was it a case of, like, what portion of that was club money and what, like, your club money, and what portion of that was you going around the country? I assume going around the country or were you just going around the capital at this point? What's the...
Even overseas.
Okay.
I was getting overseas gigs as well.
Right.
Still am occasionally. The club when it's doing well is a pretty steady stream of income,
right?
But it can also, you know, like it can lose money really fast too.
Hmm.
And I was doing a TV show for 4 years every week, so that was quite a bit of money coming in, which has supported the club when it wasn't doing well,
right?
You know, I mean, it's yeah, and just all sorts of various little things. You know, that's the I think, at least my philosophy in the performing arts is have a lot of tools in the toolbox for making money. And yeah, I'm still thinking I should probably start doing some voiceover stuff and things like that.
Voiceover stuff and
things like that, just to add some more, you know, some more streams of income. Because, yeah.
Yeah, no, most people who are full-time have said that they can't just make a living off the circuit. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty impossible. Even if you're gigging, you know, six nights a week and you know, doing weekend stuff and whatever, it's just not plausible.
You can just off the circuit. But I mean, you're still looking at a, you know, not a huge income.
Right.
It's possible to do it. Because you think, you know, double or triple up on a Saturday night. A good level pro should be able to make about, yeah, probably around 600 a week,
right,
off the circuit. But that's a, you know, it's a tough way to make a living.
Yeah.
To make less than a plumber.
Hello, listener. It was at this point in the podcast we actually had to move location, and I have tried without success to try and edit it so that it is seamless into the next part of the podcast. You're not missing out on anything. We did stop recording and then move, so it's not like I've had to edit out any really interesting and insightful facts. But I thought, while I have this opportunity, because I don't normally do this, I like to usually leave it. The concept behind the podcast originally was that it would be like an unedited conversation between me and someone from industry, and it would be a bit like you were sat next to someone or next to a couple of people having a chat at a pub in Edinburgh and you were just listening in, which is why I don't normally do this, but I'm just trying it out to see if it makes a difference. So while I've got you, while I've got a minute, I would like to just quickly reel off a few ways that you can support the show if you were so inclined to. Firstly, you can leave us a review on iTunes. They are being read by future guests, so they are invaluable for not only showing that I do have people that are listening, but people that are listening are engaged enough to take the time to write maybe 50, 60 word reviews and give it some star ratings. So if you have a minute and you have an iTunes account, please do that. Just leave me an honest rating and review. It really, really will help out. Two, link a friend to a podcast. If you have enjoyed an episode and you have made a friend on the circuit recently, or you've been chatting to someone recently, or you chatted to someone a year ago and they said something like, oh, I wonder how you get something on TV, or I wonder what agents are looking for, or I wonder what this promoter's booking policy is, and you've listened to an episode that's related to that, do them a favour and link them to it. Just block it on their wall. Don't send it privately, because if you put it on the wall, then other people might see it and it'll help spread the show. Really helps out. We are in the home stretch to 100,000 downloads, and I am so excited about that. You have no idea. Like, I've been watching it grow just over the last 18 months, and it is, I just can't thank you enough. Seriously, most of the downloads come from people that stream it off my website, and so that's why I'm saying link to them still. But also, most of the downloads come from people who are sharing the links and sharing the pod, not the direct subscriptions. So do subscribe if you haven't already. That's another way you can help out the show, because it means that you will get it straight into your inbox, but also it means that the download number will go up, and the quicker... I've been told this is true, but I'm not sure how true it is, because no one really knows how the iTunes algorithm works, but the quicker that your episode gets downloaded, the more popular iTunes thinks it is, and so the higher up the chart it becomes, so the more discoverable it is. Now, we are pretty much consistently in the business and careers chart top 50, right? And often when I release a new episode, we jump into the top 20 in careers and top 10 in business, which is great. But I would love it if we could crack the top 5. Like, just one. The third way you can help, become a patron. The patronage has slipped slightly recently, which is absolutely fine, because I wouldn't ask anyone to donate who can't afford it. And if you can't afford it and you need to cancel, that is fine as well. Hopefully other people will join and support it. So if you're getting any value out of this show and you think you would love to see it move forward in a positive direction and you want to give me a budget to get that to happen, please do become a patron. There's a link in the show notes. You can donate from $1, which is 80p a podcast. So if you're enjoying getting up to 90 minutes of quality interviews with the industry leaders in comedy and you would love to see this show carry on, please do that. I'm traveling around at the moment and I'm trying to do the podcast. Having a bit of a budget does help, clearly. So if you can take a minute and help out, that would be amazing. If you want to just do a one-off donation, you can do that via PayPal on my website as well. Or if you just want to do a monthly reoccurring fee, there's a PayPal thing on there which allows you to just select 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever you think you want to give or whatever you can give per month. Just to put it in context, I do 3 podcasts a month at most that I charge for. It means I take a day off work, or I have to travel somewhere, or I have to, you know, just put extra effort in for certain things. It just helps out. So if you would be willing to help me out that way, that'd be amazing, and just massively appreciated. Seriously, I can't thank you enough. Final thing that you could do is join the Facebook group, which is called Ask the Industry Podcast, and it is on Facebook, obviously, and it's the best place for you to get the most up-to-date information on upcoming guests, but also you'll be able to ask questions to future guests. People have asked me recently, you know, like, oh, I didn't realize that guest was coming on. It's the best place to have like sort of group discussions and things. So for example, I'm going to Manchester in a few weeks and I'm trying to get a few promoters up there. I'm going to Brighton for the Fringe. I'm getting a few people down there. So I'll ask in there for suggestions for people that you'd like to hear on there. And I will link you out when the people that I have got confirmed are on and ask for your questions there. So that's the best place to do that, to help out the show. It really makes a difference to the show, to the download numbers, to my financial status. Without any more delays, let's get back to the interview with David. I hope when I edit this, it's not too rambly. Thank you very much for listening.
It was so clear that they were not technical and not very good and not very experienced. Always look for the stuff that looks really used. There's probably a reason.
Yeah. You don't... I know what you think. I know what you mean. Mm. Yeah. While we're on Edinburgh, let's talk about that really quickly. Could you take the Soho Comedy Club to Edinburgh?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. And how many... A couple of years now you've done that.
I've done 10 Edinburghs in a row. And this is going to be actually my first year not doing it.
Okay.
I didn't have fun last time. I didn't have... And didn't get a single review on my solo show. And it was a really good solo show. I just thought, why am I doing this? I may have lost a TV show, too.
What, from doing Edinburgh?
Yeah. So, like, there was no... I didn't make money. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't get anyone reviewing my show. I just thought, what a colossal waste of my time. Time and energy that could be better spent elsewhere. However, it was a great experience when I was a newer comic and really needed stage time, and you know, that was I wouldn't say Edinburgh is useless just because I've now, where I am in my career, finding it pretty useless,
right?
But I have, yeah, I've brought up at least 2 shows a year since 2008. So 2006 was my first Edinburgh. 2007 had 1 show, and then 2008 had 3 shows a day.
Wow.
And pretty much kept 3 shows and went down to 2 shows only 2 years ago. So, yeah, I've done a lot of Edinburgh shows. Mm. Like one year I was doing 4 a day.
Because it
was fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did it help to break even or to make profit by spreading it across shows?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. The more shows, and you get a thing where you flyer, you get people in, and you have more shows, you have more things to appeal to people, and you get to, if people enjoyed one show, they'll come to another show. So if you can get people into any one show, you've got them in for all 4 or all 3 or whatever.
As long as it's not the same material.
Yeah.
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 Okay. And when you took up Soho, I mean, the Soho is a London-based branding.
Yeah.
So what was did it translate up there? I mean, did they sort of go, oh, this is a London club that's come to Edinburgh, or was it just...
I just thought, Before that, it was called The Midnight Hour.
Right.
And then I put it, and then I just branded it as Soho. I thought, why not? Why not have it as the same brand? People know it from London, and people who are up in Edinburgh to get more brand recognition. I mean, the more you get the brand out there, the more people see it, the more it goes into their head. So yeah, that was kind of the thought of just, yeah, sure, have people running around Edinburgh with the Soho Comedy logo T-shirts and handing out flyers, and people from London will see it. People coming who haven't been to London, or yeah, just get it out there more.
Did it help in terms of getting more exposure nationally for, you know, around from comedians? Because obviously there are clubs in Manchester that I will have never have heard of because I've never been there.
Yeah.
So was that an intention of yours at all, or was it, did you not really mind about that?
I just didn't see a downside, really. It's getting more brand recognition, just getting the brand in front of more eyes. So I think amongst comedians, they probably already know about the club. Or certainly amongst the comedians that I'm interested in hiring. I did have a thing right now where we're having an open spot on the weekends because I want to make sure I'm expanding my horizons. And it's very easy to wind up where you know a couple hundred comics and you're friends with them and you're performing with them, and there's other comics and you're just kind of not in the consciousness, which is why I started doing an open spot so I can try people out with no risk to the club and I'm not staking my reputation on it. But I did have one guy who asked if it was if it was a bringer gig. I was like, dude, you're just way too inexperienced even to be considered for this.
Yeah. That's... Oh, and ask who it was.
Yeah.
But that's incredible. Okay. And in terms of... So like you said, I mean, it can get to a stage, especially if you're not running... Because, I mean, I assume you do all the bookings.
Yeah.
So as a result, do you like dealing direct with comedians or do you deal with agents mainly? What's your...
I prefer to deal directly with comedians. But I understand why people have agents. So I deal, and some agents are great and some are a pain in the ass, and I'm not going to mention who those people are.
Right.
And there are some agents where I grudgingly work with because they're just such a pain in the ass to deal with. And if people pull enough gigs on me, where I'm left scrambling to find cover after it's there, you know, the acts have gone out in the listings, whether it's the act themselves or an agent, is, you know, it certainly does make me think, all things being equal, I'll choose someone else.
Yeah.
Unless they have, you know, unless it's an, you know, amazing performer that I'm after and I just, there, it's not all things being equal. Okay. Where were we?
Exactly. I mean, one of the big things that's changed in London very recently is the closure of Time Out Comedy.
Yeah.
How do you think, or how has that, or how do you think that's going to affect your club?
Well, I think only incrementally. I mean, I think the problem was is that people were less and less going to it. But when I started... God, when I started the club, that it was flyers and a listing in Time Out. You know, that was all the marketing I did, and we were full. It's a lot harder now, but there's so many places to list, and I think. Do you use the Time Out website?
I did. I've sort of slowed it down since they've sort of not doing... I mean, sometimes to look stuff up.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Historical stuff or whatever?
Yeah.
Not massively. I use the Londonist a bit more now, if you know them. Tend to use social media. So if like someone I like says I'm doing this gig, I'll go.
I think it's kind of it's a shame because there is I don't really find that there is sort of a central repository anymore.
Right.
Where that used to be the case. I mean, it used to be, you know, you wanted to know what gigs were in London, check out Time Out. Mm. And every gig was there. And now... I think smartphones and the proliferation of websites has led to a much less organized way of finding out information.
Would you, because I think for me, I think it's the other way around, but I think discovering stuff is harder for me. Mm-hmm. So I curate, you know, my Twitter feed or my Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
So I can find out exactly the information I want from different places. It's finding new places for me to find out stuff or to send off my, you know, listing from my gigs or whatever that I find the hardest bit.
Although I know being introduced to something new that you didn't already know about.
Yeah. Or finding a new comedian or a performer or a show that, I don't have new information coming to me. I only have information from the ones I'm interested in. But it's like listening to an album over and over again. Eventually you want a new album.
You want to hear something else.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily want it from the same singer. Not that the singer's got any worse or anything. It's just that. I just wonder because, like you said, if Flyering's dying off, and if Time Out was not as much of a help as it once was. You said that, like, you've got several methods in London. Well, like, you have several things that bring in certain pockets of people.
Yeah.
What, do you use apps, or are you... What's your...
Yeah. We use everything we can think of, we use, and then we track how well it does. And it's sort of, there is no magic bullet. Mm. You know, it's if anything, it's just doing a lot of different things. Sort of, and some of the things are not very effective. You know, we've looked at that and tracking what works and what doesn't. But mostly what we find is everything works a little bit. Mm. And nothing is magic.
What's the least effective thing you've tried?
Stuff we don't do anymore.
Yeah. Any examples?
There are some places where we'd never get listings.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like we'd list and we just never once got... and these were online things where we never once got a link through and looked at it and went like, you know, we've been doing this for a year and we have never once had someone click through. This is pointless.
Yeah.
So there are things like that. Mm. Print advertising. Utterly useless. It produces absolutely nothing, and I feel sorry for the people who are in ad sales in printed publications. It tried it and it returns precisely zero. It is just money. You know, I would have been better off going and having a really nice meal for me and all my friends, because it would have been as effective at getting people in as print advertising has been.
Okay. Yeah, I mean...
No, it would probably be more effective. We'd probably get the waiter to come.
I mean, I think... I mean, Prince... I mean, you were a journalist and dabble sometimes.
I was a print journalist.
Yeah, and so. I do that sometimes as well. Yeah. And you find online, if you get your article published, it's way more... Well, obviously, it's going to be way more read because it's wider circulation, but print stuff, I just don't... It just doesn't make any viable sense anymore, I don't think.
Not for advertising.
Right.
I still subscribe to a couple magazines. You know, so I mean, I do read print, and it's easier to read, and you know, stick a magazine in a coat pocket. Reading stuff on a phone is not fun.
It just doesn't get you to go down to the club if you saw it in a magazine.
Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of progression in your club, seeing as it's like a sole venture, I assume you're the only person that runs, or the main person that runs it?
I'm the main person, but yeah, I mean, I have a show manager and techs and a marketing person in charge of marketing, you know, who also helps out with bookings. I mean, so it's not just me. Mm. That's why it's not the royal we when I say we. I mean, it's decisions are made collectively. Mm. And I mean, I'm the big boss, and my business card says Big Cheese.
Yeah.
But it really isn't just me. That everything that when we make decisions at the club, they're collective decisions.
Okay. And in terms of bookings and progression and stuff, what is the ladder? What does the ladder look like for your club?
Used to be easier. There used to be a really smooth progression from new act to headliner, and that's not the case anymore. For headliners, I just get the best act I can find, and then I try to make sure that the bill is balanced and there's variety to the bill. And in a sense, there is progression, but most of the people I book as headliners have been going since before the club was founded.
Right.
So people who are doing open spots... Actually, people who are doing open spots now, they're pretty experienced comedians. So, but, I mean, there is a progression in it. But the low end is... I don't even... There's a lot of comics who... I think they're years away from having the skills before I would even think of them as an open spot. And that's just... Soho Comedy Club is not a new act night. It's... even the least experienced are probably... a couple years in, and the ones with that little experience are very talented. There's only one guy who I ever booked for a paid spot after 6 months of gigs, and he was a character act, and I asked him how many gigs he'd done. He said 52. And he was amazing, wonderful performance, astonishingly good writing. And I was like, how can this be possible? Mm. And then I found out he was a professional comedy writer and had and was an actor. Right. And I went, oh.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You had this. You had the performing skill. You had the writing skill. You've just put them together.
Yep.
And now you've done it 50 times, and you've figured out how to do it.
Yep. Can I ask who that was?
Nat Tapley.
Okay.
With Sir Ian Bowler.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look them up. I've not heard of
him. He's wonderful. Wonderful political satire.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's very, very good.
And in terms of scouting for acts, obviously you gig around the circuit a lot, so you notice people, and obviously I assume take recommendations from other clubs.
I take recommendations from people I know, whose judgment I respect. And if people are playing a lot of other clubs, that probably means they're a pretty good act.
Right.
And that's one of the things I found Edinburgh so useful for. You just get to see so many people. But yeah, I mean, but also I have people just apply and say, hey, look, I'm a pro. I've been going for quite a while. Here's some clips of me. That's how I was the first guy to put Magnus Bettner on stage in the UK. And a guy sent me an email who I'd met before and who was a brand new comic, but he wound up being his agent, and said, hey, I've got this Swedish comic. He's really big stuff in Sweden. And he sent me a link to him doing a show in English. And it was an hour-long show of him in a church, and it was hysterically funny. I find I almost never laugh out loud watching something at my computer. And I was laughing out loud. And went, yeah, absolutely, I'm booking him. You know, got back in touch and said, yes, absolutely. And so there is that too. But do they have to be good to go that method, that route. Simon King is another guy I did that way. And
so close to my name. That was going to be such a quote then if you'd...
and Simon King is a very good comedian. Yeah, there's a handful who've come that way.
And obviously there's a lot more comedians now than when you started.
There's a lot of comedians.
Okay.
Yeah. There's fewer shows, I think. I think there was more comedy clubs in central London when I started. And one of the things that astonishes me is, like, when I first started running the Round Table was running, like 5 or 6 nights a week. I think maybe even 7 nights a week doing comedy at the upstairs room at the Round Table. And there was the Blue Posts, and people were doing comedy shows in there. And there were, and then at the other Blue Posts, I mean, it was... You know, there was lots of little inexpensive gigs with dedicated comedians going to them and doing spots. And those just don't seem to exist anymore. I mean, have you seen a gig at the Queen's Head on Denman Street? I mean, 99 does Sundays, but I think it's just so that they keep their toe in and they can't get enough people to fill more than the King's Head on a Sunday, which is tiny. It's 20 people. But I don't see a lot of those type of gigs. So I think there are in many ways fewer gigs, and there in even the big paid gigs, there's a couple clubs that have gone belly up in the West End, and fewer nights. So, I mean, I don't know if there's more comedians, but I think there's fewer performing opportunities than there used to be.
Has that worried you at all?
Yes and no. This is going to be sort of a... I studied in graduate school. I studied economics, and for a little while I was an economist. And one of the things I covered as a journalist was economics. And what it says about the economy and about the comedy industry and the economy, broader economy, is a very bad thing. The spend on entertainment before the banking crash was more spread out during the week. It's now quite concentrated onto Saturday. And look, if I could get the audience, I would run 7 nights a week. No problem. I'd hire new people. Problem is, you can't get an audience on a Tuesday. It's very hard to get an audience, and the people who are getting audiences on a Tuesday aren't charging. I mean, Top Secret does it, but I mean, they're essentially running a free gig with pretty decent comedians, and they're making the money off the bar. And since they're paying for the space, they might as well be selling alcohol. But that's their business model, is they make their money off the bar.
You don't make any money off your bar?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm all doors. Yeah.
Right.
Everything. Soho Comedy Club is supported by the ticket price.
Okay.
So that's also why when I've had people say, well, you know, we keep the bar and a portion of the ticket sales, like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Maybe not with us, you don't. That's a
And we've gone through quite a few venues now at this point. You know, we were at the Comedy Pub, and then we're at the Empire Casino, and so we were briefly at Koo Bar. You know, we've done a lot of different venues in central London. Which is a point leading to nothing, so ask another question.
Well, no, I was going to ask, so as an economist or as someone who analyzes the economy, is it a case of people don't want to risk going out of the in the week because they don't want to have a hangover in the middle of the week, or is it just live for the weekend mentality of sort of the way?
What it is that basically you saw a pretty big decrease in people's spending power. And all of the economic gains since that decrease have all accrued to a very, very small percentage of the population. So basically what you're seeing is, for most people, their incomes fell and have not come back up. And a lot of other things have gone up in price. And if you look at the median household income's budget on what they can afford to spend on arts and entertainment, they can basically afford to go out once a month. And before the crash, they could afford it twice a month.
Right.
So essentially, what's happened is there's half as many people going out. They have half as much money to spend on going out. And I think that's really the issue, is that there are less audiences. So people take, because they don't get to go out as much, they take fewer chances. So that's why you see big TV names, they're doing really well and really high price, where people are going out once because they're going, if I'm going to go out and I'm going to spend money, I want to make sure what I'm going out. Whereas that only helps the headline, you know, the very, very top. For the whole rest of the circuit, it requires people to go, yeah, I know I'm going to probably have a good time. Let's do it. And that's, you know, that's, it's off that segment that we make our living. And okay, so what I'm saying basically is you've had a greater concentration of wealth, and people are taking, they're not spending as much money, and the money they are spending is going to a very, very small percentage. So it's bad for the industry as a whole, and it means that the economy is hollowing out in the middle.
It's like the 80-20 principle.
Hmm?
The 80-20 principle. So 80% of the ticket sales are going to 20% of the, or probably less, of the circuit.
I would say it's more like 81.
Right.
Seriously.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of, I mean, there's a lot of universities and colleges and stuff in London.
Yeah.
All of whom, you know, sort of still have student loans and so a bit of a disposable income. Has that not helped it out at all? I suppose we're talking about London.
I don't think it's. I think at the end of the day, you've got students have less money. I mean, it's. When I first started running Soho Comedy Club, I found that you could pretty much get an audience any night of the week except Tuesday. Sunday is really hard too, but with the exception of Tuesday and Sunday, you could pretty much get an audience any day of the week. Mm. And now I find that we have five times as many people on Saturday as we do on Friday.
Okay.
So if that gives you an idea how concentrated.
Yeah.
You know, if maybe not five times, but four times.
Why not Tuesday and Sunday? Do you know why those are the bum days, I suppose?
It just seemed like the quietest nights.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the central London is, the West End is pretty quiet on a Sunday. It's pretty amazing the difference of on Leicester Square between Saturday night, where it's thousands of people going through it per minute, and then Sunday, where you can pretty easily count every single person on the square. And, you know, it will be like half a dozen. It's kind of creepy how fast, like, when the Saturday night clears up, it's just, it stays, you know, there's more people at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday or on Sunday morning than there are is at 4 in the afternoon Sunday.
Right.
It's kind of creepy that way.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's just people got work the next day?
Yeah.
Or, right.
Yeah. Also, I think it's a function of the concentration of wealth and people concentrating their spend into, you know, when they go out, they're going to go out at one time and then not other times.
Yeah, like one big hit and then...
Yeah.
Do you find...
You know, the old saying was Thursday's the new Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah? Saturday's the new Friday.
Right. Friday's just getting a bum deal right
yeah.
now. Yeah. Yeah. So do you find then that, like, at the end of the month or the start of the month,
yeah,
there's more people going out because obviously if they've been paid, they're more likely to just go, oh, let's go on a big blowout type thing? Or does it not work like that over the course of say, 4 Saturdays?
I don't think that has much an effect.
Okay.
There's a little bit of that, but yeah, not that. I think other things are more important. I think the weather has a big impact.
Okay. As in people not going out because it's cold, or
if it's really bad weather, people won't go out. If there's a tube strike, people won't go out. However, if it's raining, that's fine. People will go out.
Yeah.
It's...
we're half expecting
If there's snow, no, nobody goes out. Tube strike is pretty bad. And... but the big killer is warm sunshine. That's just... Nobody wants to go inside.
Yeah.
When it's warm and sunny. And, you know, everyone's outside drinking. And by the time there's comedy on,
yeah, they're either drunk or they don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've noticed that pattern. And
yeah.
Yeah. Edinburgh's very well timed so that it's kind of not as sunny usually. And it's.
Well, also, people get. They get enough sun. Mm. Part of it's physiological. The truth is that all winter long, people are using their stores of vitamin D. And by the time spring comes around, they're pretty low. The body needs to replenish. And as soon as the sun comes out, people are outside trying to... it's part of it's just physiological. And it feels really good to be in the sunshine when you haven't been in it for a while. And studies have found that it activates the pleasure centers of the brain, of course. Mm. And how do you compete with that? Physiological need that people have.
Yeah.
That, and you can add beer to it. So, hey...
Why do you need jokes?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. You already feel good.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I'm not going to book any gigs in July. I'm just going
to... But after people have sort of been in the sun, and they're physiologically, they have enough vitamin D again, the sun is not so attractive anymore. So by July... By late July, people are going, I could go inside.
All right, June.
Yeah.
Okay, these are quick-fire questions. You can take as long as you want to answer them. They're just the same for every guest, basically. What are the best books on comedy writing or stand-up that you've ever read?
Jean Perret's book on comedy writing. That's the best comedy joke writing book.
What's it called?
How to Write Comedy or something.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
I think it's out of print, unfortunately. But all that's right. Very good. On being a comedian, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of autobiographies. Mm. I read all of George Carlin's books, but they're like his comedy writing exercises that were funny. Mm. And the... what else? There's... Steve Martin's autobiography is really good.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
What's the best show you've ever seen? Can't be one of your own.
Comedy show?
Yeah. Or it can be comedy or...
That I've seen live?
Either.
That's a...
Do you want to come back to that one?
No, I would say that George Carlin is probably the best comic of the 20th century. And a couple of his shows, which I saw recorded, was just amazing. And one of the big influences on my comedy, certainly. I've seen so many good shows. love Bill Burr's stuff. It's fantastic. Kerry Marx is a great guy to see. Is I up in Edinburgh whenever he does an Edinburgh show. That's the one thing I see other than, you know, that I'm not performing in. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to...
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wish I could give a better answer.
No, it's fine. It's fine. What is the biggest mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
Not bringing a really pretty girl from Texas to Hawaii with me when I was given a press junket. that's one mistake that looms in my mind. God, there's so many.
So many mistakes or so
yeah,
many?
Yeah, okay. So many mistakes. I don't know. I mean, but some of the mistakes I made, like the mistakes of in journalism.
Right.
Where I should have taken a job and didn't. I was invited to join an investment bank a couple times. And whenever I'm lamenting how little money I have, I think that was a mistake. But then when I get over that temporary money problem, I think, no, I made the right decision.
Right.
So it's kind of hard. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am now, and I like where I am now.
Okay.
So if I had made different decisions in the past, I wouldn't be where I am now, and I think that I wouldn't like that.
Okay.
So how did I overcome it? By doing what I love to do in a place that I love to be. And, yeah, in general, I'm quite happy with my life, and I'm quite happy that I haven't reached the level of success I want to because I have something to strive for.
Mm. Okay. What is the most interesting thing you do that nobody else sees, comedy-wise?
Comedy-wise? The TV show I did for 4 years. it's not a joke. Almost no one saw it in the UK.
Right.
Hugely popular in East Africa.
Right. I
talked to some people who were doing a documentary in Eritrea. And they came back and said, dude, you're a huge star in Eritrea.
Wow.
I had to get out a map to figure out where Eritrea was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was the name of the show?
Double Standards.
Double
Standards.
And who produced it? And
it was Alternate Reality Productions, starring Afshin Ratansi, who was also the producer of it.
Cool.
And did that with him for 4 years. In the last year, I wrote the show, and as well as I appeared in every episode, and but I also co-produced it, wrote it in its entirety, and co-produced it the last year, which was 50 episodes.
Mm.
So I have a lot more TV experience than people realize.
Yeah, yeah,
220 episodes.
But yeah,
but yeah, viewership in the UK, like 7.
Yeah,
and I'm kind of not exaggerating. That's,
no. It's there was a film I watched.
Also, my thing, I think what was to that question, most interesting comedy thing I've done that not many people know about, is my solo shows. I did a show called You're Being Lied To, which was all about tabloid journalism, and then everybody else found out that tabloids were full of crap, and then it kind of became old hat. Mm. And then I did a show called Conspiracy. All about conspiracy nuts. And the first show, I think, wasn't... The first year I did that show, I don't think it was very good. The last time I did it, I think it was an excellent show. Mm. And I think if I'd managed to get a single reviewer in, it would have been 4 or 5 star. I think it was an excellent show. And it was that combination, which I really like, of being informative and interesting and funny all at the same time.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Luck of the draw, getting them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a terrible venue. Did you hear about the whole Cowgate Head
thing? Yeah, I was Cowgate Head as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wound up in the Arches, and getting people to the Arches was like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
If I had 25 people in my show, it was a good day.
Yeah.
And that's, soul crushing, especially when you've got like 6 people in the audience and going, this is a good fucking show. I'm too experienced. I'm... to be, this sucks.
Was that what put you off going then, the Freestyle issue?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you not
well,
just go
that's
again?
Why I'm taking a year off. Was just that... the experience of doing that last year, I thought, well, what's the point? I would wind up, I was just so frustrated. Every day, just incredibly frustrated. And I thought, why am I doing this to myself? Why don't I have a summer? I can do lots of gigs. If I want to do a show, I can tour a show. Mm. This is, I just thought, I'm spending money to torture myself.
Mm. Okay. Who do you think is the most underrated person in the industry?
Kerry Marks.
Okay. Reason?
Yeah, I just think he's an absolutely superb comic. Another one I'd say is very good, is Canadian guy, Simon King. I think Kerry Marks, I mean, he should have his own TV show.
He had his own radio thing recently, Intensive Kerry. That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, I saw that Edinburgh show. It was great. Mm.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. Beautifully written show.
Mm.
And the show he did the year before was really good as well. Mm. I think he's one of the best comedians in the UK.
Cool. What do you think is the biggest problem in the comedy industry and how would you go about solving it?
I think the biggest problem with the comedy industry... in the live comedy industry, I think one of the problems is that there's a stereotype of what comedy clubs are like. And the stereotype is very, very different from the reality. Except for that club I mentioned before, which is awful. But there's so many good comedians. So I think that's a problem. But also there's a big problem where... British music scene used to be one of the best music scenes globally. And then you had people who were creating manufactured bands, talentless, pretty hacks who can dance a bit and sing a bit. And propelling people into stardom, like manufactured stars. That's a terrible system, and the same. And people are trying to do that now in comedy. They are taking people and trying to propel them into stardom who aren't very good. And I really thought it was quite dramatic when I saw George Michael sing a duet in one of these appalling karaoke competition shows, X Factor, Britain's Got Talent, yeah. But not in evidence on this show. And the winner, that year's winner, was this guy, and he sang a duet with George Michael, who is a real musician and a really good songwriter. And they sang a duet together, and George Michael's voice was just head and shoulders above. And I thought, they've basically killed the system to create another George Michael.
Mm.
And they're putting out this talentless hack. And I think there's a real effort to do that with comedy as well. And I hate it. Comedy is one of the few things where it is that person's writing and thoughts and performance. And so I think that has the potential to destroy the industry, that sort of propelling phony stars. And the other thing, and I find this very worrisome, UK right now has a terrible government, and there's no political satire. Where is the satire? Why aren't people ruthlessly making fun of Cameron?
This is the second podcast I've done today, and both of you have said that.
I find it shocking that there isn't more political satire. There's a new show that's coming out with Matt Ford on BBC Two, so hopefully they'll have some real satire. I'm hoping. I mean, God's sakes, the Prime Minister of this country put his dick in a dead pig's head and nobody's mentioning this?
Mm.
Like, that should be a running theme.
Mm. The best political satire person I saw stopped about 2 years ago And I met up with him recently and I asked him why. And he said, people don't know what I'm talking about because no one stays up to date with politics because they're not interested in it. So, you know, if you do a well-informed political crowd,
yeah,
he does well. If you go to a regular club and he talks about a policy or something, no one has a clue. He has to explain the policy and then do the joke, and that's yeah. doesn't work.
Yeah. Who is that?
Alex Chapman.
No. Okay.
Do you know?
I know the name.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know him personally.
He's... I'll edit this all out, but he's looking at starting his own podcast and stuff mm-hmm. soon. I'll link you when it goes out. He's incredible, but he was like, just no one knows what I'm talking about. Like, yeah. just no one has a clue. I loved him because when he talked about something to do with politics, he tended to make it accessible enough that I would get it, and I like politics, but I'm not into it as much as he is. But then he would, if we met up on like an open circuit thing, because this was, 4 or 5 years ago, he'd be like, no one has a... Either they don't know what I'm talking about, or they're not willing to laugh at it because I've gone on after someone whimsical who's set the bar to like this standard that he's not going to,
It's hard. I used to do lots of politics in my set, and I don't anymore. Mm. All my political thoughts are... It's not really in comedy much, although I should. This is a terrible government. Right? They're making such incredibly bad decisions that are affecting people's lives, and nobody's mentioning it. Mm. So, yeah.
If you had one bit of advice to give someone who was going to try and get a spot with Soho Comedy Club, mm-hmm. or just was going to start trying to move up to the level of Soho Comedy Club, what would you say to them?
Gig all the time. Write loads of stuff. Perfect the good stuff. Get really good.
Right.
And, once they're really good, pester me.
And what's the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
Slow down.
After that... Okay, well, I'm going to leave it there with a couple of thousand confused comedians as to what to do.
If it's going well, slow down. If it's going badly, slow down.
Right.
Yeah. That's okay. The best. It was Reg D. Hunter gave me that advice.
I like it, yeah. Okay. All right, well, thank you very much for coming on.
All right, thank you.
That was David. I really loved chatting to him. I just felt like he had such an analytical mind and such a business brain. And I really hope that you got as much out of that as I did. I felt like it was just a really in-depth interview, especially for a very short amount of time. So if you've enjoyed this show, as I said, sort of about halfway through, if you could donate, that'd be amazing. Haven't really had any donations for a little while, so if you wouldn't mind sort of chucking me a couple of quid to help me continue with this show, that'd be amazing. There's a PayPal link on my website. Or if you'd like to do a regular donation, you can become a Patreon, which means that you donate per episode from $1, which is about 80p. So that'd be amazingly helpful. Please do consider doing that if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, don't worry about it. Just share this link with a friend. It really helps out the show. If you don't have any friends or you don't want to do that, join the Facebook group. If you don't want to do that or you've already done that, leave us a review in iTunes. If you've already done that or you don't want to do that, your job's done. So have a great afternoon. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for supporting. Thank you very much for sharing and donating, and whichever way you've chosen to support the show, just infinitely thank you. And I'll see you in about 10 days time. Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.